Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Welcome back. It's another week with the Urban Sports Scene. I'm joined with two out of my three co-hosts. To my right, super producer, super engineer, Wally Yolo. What's going on, sir?
Good day, gents.
And to my left, we got a guy who hasn't been here for a while. Happy to have you back. Ray, what's going on?
Chilling.
Glad to have you back, Ray. You know I missed you, man.
Thank you, sir.
No problem.
All right, well, you
said it was straight masculinity. I miss you.
Now that we got the formalities out of the way, let's jump into what we usually do around this time, and that's the pregame. First of all, a guy that's been in the news a lot over the past couple of weeks and month, Cam Newton. He recently appeared on ESPN's quarterback camp with John Gruden. One of John Gruden's former players, Sean King, alluded to, John Gruden doesn't necessarily develop young quarterbacks. He doesn't have the patience. So why is a guy like John Gruden, why does he have this format to work with young quarterbacks? What do you think?
The track record shows he hasn't developed a young quarterback. But I think Sean King also is coming from a perspective of being benched by John Gruden. When John Gruden got there, Sean King was the starting quarterback. And he was replaced by Brad Johnson, John Gruden went on to win a Super Bowl with Brad Johnson. So I think it's some saltiness there on his part. However, he does make a valid point. If it was coming from Warren Sapp, I think I would probably take it with more
credibility.
Yeah, than Sean King, who was benched.
No, I think Sean King has a point, only because the year before, I think, or maybe a couple years before that, he did take the team to the NFC Championship game, right?
Correct.
And as a rookie quarterback, and, you know, I seen him in Tulane, and I thought he was a good quarterback in Tulane. And if John Gruden was such a great teacher of the quarterback position, you would think that he can do something with Sean King.
Yeah, Gruden is more like Shanahan. He wants to get an already developed, polished quarterback and just mold him into his system. So it's a good point, but he's a good personality. ESPN knows what they're doing. It's not because he's a quarterback guru or developer. Who else you going to get? Jaws to do it?
Yeah, I can't stand
Jaws. Jaws is not as entertaining as John Gruden.
Jaws, you have a point.
Jaws favors a certain kind of quarterback, too, as well. But
see, if it's a receiver, automatically Chris Carter or Keyshawn will be able to get that and
Chris
do it.
Carter, yeah.
But who is there that could – they don't have any good quarterbacks on their staff.
Yeah,
they got the Hasselback guy. They got Trent Dilfer. Trent Dilfer maybe can do it without people kicking and screaming.
Well, no,
yeah,
Trent Dilfer annoys me.
Why?
Because he's so great. You would think he was a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Well, he's won a Super Bowl.
By handing the ball off to Jamal Lewis?
Hand
the ball off to Jamal Lewis, really?
But he wasn't bad everywhere else he played. He was good in Tampa.
Tampa, for a little bit.
He's pretty good in Tampa. He was, what, a top 10 pick in the NFL?
So you would think he would be a great quarterback as a top 10 pick. He plays like a third-round quarterback.
Point taken. Well,
and we can sit here and criticize.
Yeah,
he can criticize it. He played on the pro level.
Yeah, I know he can criticize me.
Yeah, we can sit and
see me
talk
on
Madden about this
like
forever,
years ago.
We can sit and talk about this forever, you know. But, you know, we got to keep the show going. Talking about other retired – retired players, you know, retired players file another lawsuit against the NFLPA citing fraud.
Why do you keep looking at me?
Why do I keep looking at
you?
Because you're back. I'm excited to have you back,
first,
man.
I figured that the NFL Players Association wouldn't get sued as much, or wouldn't be as much of a gripe with a new,
what do you call it,
executive. What's DeMore Smith's title again?
Executive director.
Yeah, because Gene Upshaw, he had a horrible relationship with the retired players. Unfortunately, you know, he passed, and it's a new regime. But evidently, they're still upset. They're saying they owed a lot of money, and they are pursuing it at a pivotal time for the league. So it's interesting timing. I think they know exactly what they're doing, and they could be victorious in this lawsuit.
I'm always under the belief that one should take care of their own money. So in a way, I don't feel as bad for the players, the retired players. I think that you should be responsible to take care of your money. Like if I lost
go,
my job.
Go further on.
Like,
that.
Say, if I, for instance, have retired or have lost money or whatever. I'm responsible to have a certain portion. I'm responsible to save for myself. You know what
right.
I mean? So, for me to sue, my former employee, employer, who employed me. For me to sue them, I look kind of stupid to me.
Are you aware of what the agreement is between the retired players and the league? Because if the league evolves, they get their pension, you know,
increases.
Yeah.
As the revenue increases.
And obviously, they get nowhere near the money the players are getting today. And that's why they want what's entitled to them, owed to them.
No, I hear what you're saying, but I feel like...
I think yours is a different type of...
I hear what you're saying, but I just think that they are, like, going all in. Like, it's as if they're broke. Like, they're dead on broke.
But it's the healthcare part that's killing them, because a lot of them have injuries from the game. And a fund actually was developed to actually help out towards...
So they're not getting any of this money?
I don't know if they're not getting any of it. They're not getting enough of it.
I think they're getting something. My whole thing is that I think a lot of them being irresponsible. I think they are getting money.
Why would you say they're being irresponsible? People like Jim Otto, he's not being irresponsible. He can't walk. He needs everyday care.
I'm sure there's a lot of, I'm not speaking, there's obviously exceptions to the rules, but I'm sure there are certain individuals out
there. Like who?
I'm saying this, I'm sure there's certain individuals out there that are getting, taking their money, that they are getting and use it elsewhere.
Maybe a refrigerator Perry.
They're taking their money.
I would agree. Maybe somebody like him, he mismanaged his money and now he needs everyday health care. But that isn't football related. That's because he didn't take care of himself.
My whole thing is, you think like every player that is in suit, I mean, are suing the NFLPA about
royalties,
whatever. You think all of them are pretty much aren't taking that money?
Well, it's
and
not an individual lawsuit though.
But I'm saying I'm just talking about individual bringing this case, who going strong with this case. Some of these, to me, most of these players are spending that money wildly, and that's why they're complaining.
Like who though? Like who's spending their money wildly?
I think
you can't generalize it like that. It's just like we're going to talk later about people who are seeking loans. Every NFL player is seeking loans, but there are some out there. So we can't say all NFL players are done with their money.
My problem is, for every, but what you're doing is generalizing one situation, like a couple situations, like Aldo and things of that sort.
What are you generalizing?
Like you named the fridge. You named the fridge as one. There's sure other players out there.
The fridge technically isn't one. He ate himself until that point.
What I'm saying though, there's other players out there. I'm not, obviously I'm generalizing. You're right. I'm generalizing. But for every player that you name, like you name a couple players.
I only named one player.
You're playing like, never mind. Go ahead.
All I'm saying
is that for every player, that every bad situation, I'm sure there's a couple other individuals who are mismanaging their money and taking advantage of the situation.
I think at the end of the day, you can't make generalizations that all of them are ruining their money. But at the same time, you also know that certain players, they were used to living a certain lifestyle. So there is the possibility that they've blown their money.
Are you kidding me?
Thank you.
We need Doc Walker on this show. Doc Walker can relate. He talked to me personally about this on 980 when I called it.
He talked to you personally.
Pretty much.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
And he was saying a lot of players didn't get paid that much back then. They didn't live this lifestyle these guys live today. So, cost of living has increased since the 80s.
It has.
And if you need health care that is not covered under your insurance policy, what you going to do? You got to pay for it out your pocket.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know why you act like it's some 70-year-old guys that play in the NFL in the strip clubs throwing their money out. Saying,
I bet
we won the lawsuit.
I've seen some 70-year-old people in the strip clubs. I can imagine it.
Probably this past weekend, right?
Maybe a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Well, from retired NFL players to the potential fit to a guy who's the potential future of the NBA, Harrison Barnes, he decides to stay at North Carolina for another year because he gave reasons such as, you know, this is a precious time in his life. He wants to develop into a better person and also a basketball player. Me personally, I think he decided to stay around because of the potential lockout. You know, what do you think?
It's a lockout. He's a guaranteed lottery pick, so it would be no reason for him to stay. That's guaranteed money. So you don't throw guaranteed money on the table. You take it.
But what about the college experience?
That's a lie.
Something at all.
I'll be real. What do you go to college for?
Some people go to, the number one purpose is for education. And for two, you also develop a better understanding of who you are as a person.
What is your reason going to college? Outside of college, what is it supposed to do?
I know what you're saying, to get a job.
To get a better,
To get in a better position in life, get a job.
Exactly.
Me, I went for educational purpose.
That's good. Harrison Barnes could get paid millions of dollars. Tomorrow he can break his leg and fracture in many different places and won't get that money.
Well, he comes from a good background. It's not like his family is strapped for cash, you know what I mean? So they raised him properly, and he feels like he can stay another year.
So, I mean, but the same thing, like I said, I said this a couple shows ago. Kyle Singler stayed in school, had a chance to get guaranteed money. Now he's not a lottery pick. It is what it is.
Yeah, well, you know, I think...
He won a national championship, was MVP of the tournament, most valuable player of the tournament, and now he's not a lottery pick. But last year he had a bunch of hype saying he could be a lottery pick. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think one thing that some college underclassmen have to get a better concept is that, you know, timing is everything. So you have a situation where it's a relatively weak draft, and I'm not knocking Harrison Barnes for going back to school. I think he ultimately, in the long run, he made the right decision. But Harrison Barnes probably would have been number one, if not the number two overall pick.
Well, this is my only thing about, like I said, he's coming out next year. Rivers and company are coming out. So obviously, and Rivers is supposed to be a highly touted going to Duke. That's just another person that can push him back. Honestly. And if you look at, and if, like, what I like about the coach in Kentucky, Calipari, he told his kid straight up, like, Knight, you should go. Jones, you should go. I mean, he just kept it real with him. You should go. This is the best time to go.
Well, that's because he recruits people to take their place.
Yeah, of course. That's true. His track record shows is that if we can go off track records, his decisions, his recommendations, the best thing going.
Thank you. You just presented my whole argument. Roy Williams, that's exactly what he's telling. Look at my guys, Lawson, Hansbrough.
I'm talking about.
Hold on, let me finish.
My problem.
These are people that could have left at their freshman year, but they stayed, got better, won a championship, still high draft picks. Even Danny Green got drafted.
Yeah, they got drafted, but I mean, but
Ty Lawson was a first round pick.
Yeah, not a lottery.
So was Hansbrough.
I'm talking about lotteries, but you're right.
Hansbrough was a lottery.
Wayne Ellington.
Yeah. Wayne Ellington was not a lottery.
Danny Green. Wayne Ellington was a first round pick.
They all were first round picks. No, I mean, I'm saying, like,
and he's more talented at this level of his career than they were.
Who's talking about who?
Harrison Barnes.
Harrison Barnes is at this stage of his career.
Yes, no, I don't know.
Because they all needed to develop some more.
Did Roy tell Harrison Barnes the best thing to do is to stay?
No, I think he just
wasn't.
That's
what advising him.
I think he told.
Huh? No, he's advising him in general.
No, from my understanding is he just told him the information he got from the NBA, the talent evaluators. They told him that you would be a top pick. I think Harrison Barnes ultimately decided, and I don't know Harrison Barnes. He just decided to stay at school.
It's just like the option was there. He could have went overseas and then came to lead this year. So it's not about money with him, evidently.
As a fan of college basketball, I'm glad he is staying, though. I just think in terms of his money. You know, I always need to take guaranteed
money.
That's
more from a personal standpoint. Though. Yeah. We would all go for the money, definitely. In our positions, we wouldn't stay. But, hey, it's a good thing if him and Sullinger and other folks decide to stay.
Yeah, Sullinger too. But Harrison Barnes staying in school ultimately might have hindered another guy from keeping his job, and that guy was Rick Adelman. Today he was let go by the Houston Rockets. Me personally, I think the guy did a lot with inferior talent. You know, not having Yao Ming, his star player, when he first got there, he had Yao Ming. He was sold the job because the Houston Rockets had Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady. During the course of his coaching tenure at Houston, Yao Ming didn't play a lot of games, and Tracy McGrady was injured and never really lived up to the potential that he had, that everyone thought he had. Couple years later, Houston's front office, they decide to remake the team. They make a lot of trades. They bring in Kevin Martin. They draft Chase Budinger, Kyle Lowry, guys like that. Yeah.
They didn't draft him.
They traded for him.
Excuse me. Anyway, but you know.
No, he's a great developer of talent.
Yeah.
Evidently. It's just like I said, he's the Marty Schottenheimer.
I actually think he's better than Marty.
But he has never won a big one. But he's a great coach.
Yeah,
his record is proven. Just can't get over that hump.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at least Adelman can say he's been to the finals. Importantly, he's been to the finals. So he's been close. He's truly been close. When it comes to But I'm going to speak. Yeah, I totally agree with all y'all. I think that I don't know why Houston would fire him. I thought he did a great job in Houston. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, who's the answer in Houston? And if I was him, I would call Tim Donaghy and threaten him. If I find you, dog, it's a wrap. Because if Sacramento wins the championship, he gets an extension. They stay in Sacramento. They move to Anaheim now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Tim
man.
Donaghy has had long-term ill effects on that franchise, including Rick Adelman. Chris Webb was doing well, but he wouldn't appear on the Fab Five thing. If he'd have won that championship, he'd have been on that special.
And also, Jason Williams has announced that he's retiring. Hail the white chocolate. That's all I wanted to say.
No. Well, you know, Adelman's inability to lead the Rockets to the playoffs is the main reason that he's being fired, whether fair or not. But after the break, we'll talk about teams that did make the playoffs.
Hey, what's up? It's your man Ray Rogers of the Urban Sports Scene. And recently, Will T and I set out on a mission to see what the people think of our show. All right, there's Mike Wilbon right there. Wilbon, what you think of our show, dog?
I should say the next, it's the big thing.
Oh, that's what's up. That's what's up, man. We feel the same way. Coach Rivers, Doc Rivers. There's Doc Rivers. Go ahead, Will T. Get an interview with him.
Coach Rivers, how do you feel about Ray no longer being the host of the Urban Sports Scene?
I mean, Ray, he was absolutely sensational.
Yeah, I feel the same way, man. I thought I was great as the host, but it's all good. Big ups to my man, Fish. There's Alvin Gentry, man. Coach Gentry, what you think about Fish being the host of the Urban Sports Team?
I've always been a big fan of his.
Oh, so you familiar with him before the Urban Sports Team when he was host of the Mac Fish Show?
So no, I'm not saying that, okay? No.
So what are you saying? Anyway, man, let's move on. There's President Obama. Obama, my man Will T here, he dissed World Cup, man. What you think about him dissing World Cup?
He's a jackass.
Keep it locked to the Urban Sports Team because you never know who's listening.
To listen to the show, visit www.walio.podbean.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. If you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
Welcome back, everybody, from commercial break.
Welcome back.
NBA playoffs kicked off this past weekend. Couple of exciting games, a couple of games that weren't so much exciting. Do you think, you know, compared to the past first round, like the first opening weekends of the past playoff season, how do you think this compares? Was it more exciting, less exciting?
Why you keep looking at me?
Man.
I know, right? The first
light
day.
Skin,
the,
light
it's
skin
not
conflict.
Like the first day of the NCAA tournament. I'm not saying that. But as far as the upsets, man, I've been enjoying it. It was great to see the Lakers and the Spurs go down.
Okay, now I'm looking at you,
Zach. Yeah, I just think they were trying to upstage the tournament. They ain't March. This ain't March. So, but it was a good. It was definitely a good tournament. It was definitely a good first round joint. I thought that the Memphis Grizzlies beating the Spurs was a good game. I thought Conley Jr. is showing a lot of people out there that, you know, he's that dude to play with.
Oh, you ain't like him at first.
I know I didn't. But no, he definitely knows. I give him credit when credit's due. And Al, who's now on the show, he raised a valid point. Think about this. Who would have thought that Conley Jr. is a better pro than Greg Oden?
No one. Coming, you know, when they played in
his
high school.
His father represented both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Still represents Greg Oden.
So, you look, I mean, it was a good game. He outplayed Tony Parker. I think, you know, Spurs, but like a lot of people predicted, and I did. I don't think the Spurs will lose the series, but I do think Memphis will give them some go.
There was also
some go.
Some go. You're a clown, man. You're a clown.
I know, man. He's back on the show acting up, man.
Yeah, just acting up. It's that light skin.
I know, man.
Acting up, man. WWWW.
WWW. He's trying to mess with the revolution,
exactly. He's trying to mess with the revolution, but we're going to keep the revolution
moving.
Let's keep
moving. It going, man.
You know, you mentioned that the Spurs lost. The Lakers lost also in what some people would deem an upset. Both of them are down 0-1. Both of them were predicted to relatively breeze through this first round. Which one of the teams do you think is hitting the panic meter right now?
I would say the Spurs because they're an older team. I think the Lakers, they've dominated the Hornets during the regular season. The Spurs down the stretch to a certain extent, other than the last about five games, they played good ball, but they've been quite inconsistent after, like, you know, a certain Manu Ginobili started getting hurt, Duncan started, you know, getting hurt, so they've been a little bit more inconsistent.
I said in the previous show this can happen to the Spurs, so I'm not too surprised. The Spurs can still beat the Grizzlies. We all know that. However, Kobe calling out Powell, to me, is a panic sign on his part. I don't think that's necessary. After game one, yeah, Powell's a little lackadaisical. But why does he always feel the need to call out teammates? Maybe he's motivating Powell. It usually works, I guess. But after one game and after he sat there and said, well, the Hornets, we beat them so much that they wanted it more than we did.
Nah, I don't agree with that statement right there. I think it's the NBA playoffs. They're all professional basketball players. I think they all wanted the most. I just think that the Hornets, they executed a better game plan than the Lakers.
Well, everybody stared at Kobe. And Kobe gets mad when people play good defense on him. And Trevor Ariza played good defense.
He played great defense.
Got his points, but Kobe's moves aren't the same. That's what Charles Barkley said.
Yeah, he wasn't as fluent.
He's slower than he used to be, and Trevor Ariza got in his grill. He played with him in practice for years. He's stepping up to the challenge.
We shouldn't even be talking about Kobe Bryant. We should be talking about Chris Paul, like
the best point guard in the NBA.
The guy who I say is the best point guard in the NBA. But Chris Paul, how he just abused Derek Fisher. And basically poured him out.
What do you have? 33 points, yeah. 14 assists, 7 rebounds.
You're trying to make an argument. How come you don't want me to mention Derrick Rose's stat line? You know what I mean?
Go ahead. I'll give you an opportunity.
I really don't know it for verbatim. Exactly. But it's 39. I know 39 first game, 35 second game. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
2 games. Just saying.
All right. You know, I thought, like I said, I thought that Chris Paul elevated his game. You thought that Derrick Rose elevated his game for the first 2 games of the series.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'll be honest with you. As of watching game one, the Lakers seem like they don't have a plan for that pick and roll with Chris Paul.
Not at all.
They don't have a plan.
I don't know. Lamar Odom usually is a better defender on shorter guys, but nobody at this point looks like they can defend Chris Paul from that pick and roll. Bynum definitely looks like he's out of shape.
The thing about it is, the thing to me that is helping New Orleans is that Chris Paul is aggressive. He's trying to score. And it's not as if he's just trying to get everybody involved. He can do it, but he's trying to score as well. And Derek Fisher, Pau Gasol on the switch, is pathetic. I mean, what he's doing to these guys, I feel sorry for Derek Fisher. Because he's getting embarrassed on national TV.
Yeah, he's getting abused. That one, I think it was like 2 minutes left in the game where he hit him with a crossover, stepped back, and just hit the jumper from the top of the key.
Emeka Okafor has to get better on defense, but I still like his effort. He played hard. Aaron Gray played excellent.
Aaron Gray.
And he's injured right now. So they need their entire team to play with that much energy each game to win. Ron Artest, his head isn't in the playoffs, although he has some open jump shots. But still, I'm thinking he's not there. Powell definitely didn't play up to his capabilities. But we know Powell can get like that from time to time.
He's soft.
I wouldn't call him soft.
Yeah, he's soft.
He plays timid sometimes. He is soft.
When he plays with a lack of energy in addition to him already being a soft person, that makes it even more frustrating to watch. And I think Kobe has a valid point, but just calling him out, we already know this. I don't understand going through the media at this point, but I'm glad you brought up Chris Paul because that was the most important aspect of the game about how the Hornets outplayed the Lakers.
That Hornets Lakers series looks like it's going to be an entertaining one. You don't agree?
One game doesn't do anything.
No, I mean it just looks like it'll be entertaining I'm gonna say from this aspect because the Lakers are down 0-1. So it makes it more entertaining because I'm gonna just be honest with you. I didn't think the Hornets
have
would grab
seen the
one
Bulls
game.
Pacers play yet?
Are we talking about the competition?
The Bulls Pacers. Yeah, he was saying that.
I said it's gonna be entertaining. That's my opinion. I think it's gonna be entertaining first round. I was gonna ask you guys which other series do you guys think will be entertaining?
Bulls Pacers
look
like it's gonna be a good one.
I think Pacers look like they believe they can beat the Bulls. And even though they're down 2-0, I think they're confident going to Indiana, thinking they have an opportunity to beat them 2 times in Indiana. But I'll say this, they have to find. I think they did a better job in trying to stop Derrick Rose. I think Paul George. He did a decent job against Derrick Rose. You can't tell by the stats, but he did a decent job.
Let me ask you a question. Why don't they just let other people beat them? I haven't watched both games thoroughly like you have. Like when you called me after the first game, you pretty much broke it down perfectly. So I'm trying to figure out. Go ahead.
Oh no, I just think that they should run a 2-3 zone. I think that way you stop them from driving because what he's doing is that he's getting penetration easily, honestly. And what's going, but when Paul, but I'll say this, when Paul George is on him, when he's on him, he struggles. Like, he makes, Paul George has a lateral quickness to shut off the drive and make him shoot a jump shot. So now he's doing step backs and things of that sort. If you look, honestly, he had 30, about 35, but if you look at his stats, he was 11 for 25 from the field. So, I mean, so it's not as, you know, impressive. He just shot a lot of free throws. Yeah. You know what I mean? So he did a good job. Like, if you compare 11 for 25 to what he did in game one, he pretty much just dominated and got to the rim just off his skill alone, then, you know, it's a better job. But I think they should run a 2-3 zone because, like Ray said, I think they can – I would live, honestly, with Kyle Korver shooting a bunch of threes all day or Keith Bogans trying to bust some threes all day.
We are distracted by the Knicks game right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, actually, I'm distracted from the Knicks game. Everybody knows
Knicks
that I'm
up two right now. 78-76. Carmelo got 39.
It's tied. Now it's tied. 78-78.
Speaking of the Knicks and the Celtics, do you think that? Well, clearly, you know, they it's a tie game now. Do you think they can recover and win game two in the
absolutely they can. I believe. They don't lack a mental toughness because they never had it. I mean, and they never had a mental toughness. Well, they haven't been in playoffs in how long?
7 years.
Carmelo's been to the playoffs, but the rest of the guys, Tony Douglas, you got Amari, who never advanced.
He's never really advanced,
but as a team. Ronnie Chernoff has that experience. But as a collective group and the coach that they have, there's not a whole lot going on mentally for them. So they're just going to go out there and play carefree. Shoot jump shots. They've shown some toughness in this game. They've been down 8 several times, and they've come back to tie score. So,
good three. He's banged a three.
And
excuse me.
Obviously, Chauncey Billups not playing and still competing. They actually can beat the Celtics. I believe it. The Celtics are an older team.
I believe it, too. Now, I'm not just talking as a Knicks fan. I just think from a match. No, I'm thinking from a matchup standpoint.
I'll be honest with you.
I'm thinking from a matchup standpoint.
They're 0-5 this season against the Celtics.
A lot of them games came right down to the wire.
And you know what? It's a pattern. Regardless, it comes down to the wire, but the Knicks will choke down the stretch. This game is close, but I think Boston will run their sets. They'll run their sets. They play solid defense, and down the stretch, good defense and solid offense will win.
Boston is a better team, more experienced team. There's no question about that. Nobody's arguing that. But the Knicks are hungry, and they're younger.
They're younger, but I just don't think they're coached
Tony
well.
Tony Douglas looks hungry to me.
No, he is.
That's the ACC right there. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think they're coached well enough to beat the Knicks. Beat the Celtics. Excuse me. You have to play defense in the playoffs, and I think
they played good defense the first game.
That's one game. You think?
I understand that, but you got to give them some credit though.
They play. And I always say I always play good defense.
You beat a dead horse with that. I'm tired of him.
They don't play solid defense. They don't.
Yeah. How many times you going to say that?
Consistently. All right. If it's a 7-game series, how many games you think they're gonna play solid defense in a 7-game series?
I don't know.
If you're a bad defensive team, your bad defense is going to show in a 7-game series.
Well, part of that is your biasness because you're rooting for the Celtics.
No, I like Melo. I'm a Melo fan.
Speaking of Melo, you know, Melo came to New York after the trade deadline. Would Melo and the Knicks, would Melo carrying the Knicks to a win in the series against the Celtics, would that kind of help define him as a New York Knick?
It won't happen, so I don't know how to answer that question. You just get to Ray.
If Carmelo Anthony and the Knicks beat the Celtics in the first round, absolutely, he is the guy in New York. I'm not saying that's going to write his entire legacy, but for right now, if he didn't do anything else for the playoffs, so what?
Yeah,
us a series win against a champion, against a team that's expected to go to the NBA Finals. Carmelo Anthony's good in our book. I mean, they just happy fans to see the Knicks back in the playoffs. Yeah. I believe there's more excitement and also enthusiasm regarding this team versus Stephon Marbury's team, who everybody knew was going to lose to the Nets years ago. What was that, 2001?
Yeah.
So this team, the expectations are higher. They, like I said,
I don't think this year the expectations are high.
Versus Stephon Marbury's squad? If you're comparing the two.
Man, this is a shame that we're saying that.
Stephon Marbury's team in 2001 was an eighth seed.
This is a shame. This is even a question.
And they were number one seed.
Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, but these guys haven't even played together 40 games.
That has to be a question. Like, Miami has a big three or whatever, and their version of it is doing well, regardless of what people think. It's doing well.
Well, it ebbs and flows with them too.
I'm just saying it's doing well, regardless of how people, whatever
they
want to say.
They have a full season. Of
yeah, that's true. But
exactly.
That's what I was alluding to.
Important Eastern Conference. I understand it was the Western Conference. It's an important Eastern
Conference.
Well,
they're playing a good opponent. You just said that.
Who? The Celtics. I'm just talking about in terms of the longevity of the season. Like we have, This has to be a discussion. They have Melo and Amar.
What was their record? It was below 500, right?
Yes.
But what was it?
I don't think it was below 500. I think it was right at 500. I think it was right at. That's not good,
but yeah, sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, he hasn't even played 40 games with the guys that are on his team,
it's
man.
It's not like Melo's like a top five player to me. I'm sorry.
Bro, he hasn't done that in the playoffs, though. He's only been on the first round once.
He's always been a winner. I like what I like about Melo.
He's only
Melo.
Been on the first round once, you know, NBA.
That's true, but that's one thing year. About Melo is he shows you a pattern of being a winner. And he's took in Denver when Denver was some crap.
Taken?
Yeah, he took Denver to the playoffs. That year they had one of the worst records in the NBA. And as soon as he got there, they were a playoff team. Melo's a winner. It's the truth. He's a winner. Syracuse, first year championship. Melo's a winner.
So what are you alluding to?
My point is that something else is going on this team.
We all know what's going on in this team. It's Mike D'Antoni is the coach. We all know that.
I don't know about that.
I know, like I said, you've been beating a dead horse.
However, this is a different team,
and Melo is trying to change the formula that's gotten him eliminated from the first round year after year.
All right, well, I'm gonna put you on the spot right now.
Melo's never got past the first round.
Once,
okay,
yeah, once. I'm gonna put you on the spot right now. Knicks or Celtics? Who wins this game? Who wins game two?
Knicks.
He already said it already.
Knicks.
He said Knicks.
Put you on
the
spot.
Celtics.
And it's 2-1. I'm a be the tiebreaker. 2-1. Knicks over the Celtics tonight.
I don't care.
You don't care.
The whole Twitter nation is all Knicks fans.
This is the point.
And lay it right there.
Look at it.
I ain't big. Dang, no, and one. Should have been an and one.
All right, anyway, also another series that's currently going on while this game is on, the Hawks and Magic. The Hawks pulled out a victory game one of the series. Dwight Howard scored 46 points, 19 rebounds. He had Moses Malone numbers.
But it wasn't
enough to beat the Hawks. I think the difference between this series and last year's series is I think the Hawks are just going to let Dwight Howard get what he does. That's what, a 20-20, and they're just going to shut down everybody else.
This is where the theme of former Wizards starts right now. Gilbert Arenas got to step up. You notice he got a lot of playing time in that first game because they're trying to spread the floor. Him and J.J. Redick in together, what are they trying to do? And Turkoglu, yeah, go ahead. Let Dwight Howard do his thing. But if you double him, they're going to kick it out. It was a coaching strategy that appeared to have failed. However, if Gilbert Arenas elevates his game to the score that he was, coming off the bench for Jameer Nelson, who we know, he did his thing game one. But it couldn't just be two guys. It's going to take a team effort because the Hawks played well together as a team. So it's going to take a team effort to defeat the Atlanta Hawks, who are experienced and better coached, it appears, than they were in the past.
And also, we're forgetting the power of revenge is awesome. They got dominated last year by Orlando. I believe all the sweep was all blowouts. And you know that festers into the following season.
I actually think that was the highest average for defeat ever in playoff history.
They treat
like
them like 25 points. They treat them like a 16 seed in March Madness. And
yeah, that's why their coach was fired.
Yes.
You know that Joe Johnson, though, flies under the radar. He, at the beginning of the season, received all the criticism. Like, they invested all that money in who? But he quietly gets the job done in Atlanta. He doesn't get credit for where he's taking that franchise to.
I think Al Horford should get a lot of credit on that team, too. They got a tough-nosed team.
He's a tough-nosed team.
Well, yeah, with Atlanta going up 1-0, do you think out of all the playoff matchups in the playoffs this year, do you think this one is probably the most evenly matched now just because of the dynamic in how Atlanta's going about defending Dwight Howard and Orlando Magic?
If I'm going off game one, I would agree with that point, but I still think eventually Orlando will find a way to get around and come back and take game two. I just feel like Orlando will find a way to dominate to get back into the series.
I believe they are the most evenly matched teams playing against one another. There's no other matchup. Like, Dallas is clearly better than Portland. LA is clearly better then New Orleans, San Antonio is a clearly better team than Memphis. Miami's clearly better than Philly. You can't name another series where the two teams are so evenly matched to where anybody can take that. Anybody can take that series. The Spurs and the Lakers losing games once was shockers, but nobody was shocked that Atlanta went into Orlando and won. And Orlando struggled this year at different times of the season. So,
Ray is right. I was just going off of myself. I was going off what happened last year. I didn't think it was a favorable matchup for Atlanta. But everybody, all the experts said that Atlanta could beat Orlando. So.
Well, you think that Orlando is going to rebound tonight and take game two. What do you think will be the key for them to get back in this series and to even it up 1-1 heading to
The key will be to not, and it's going to sound funny, but the key will be to get other players off before going to Dwight. Because as we see, they're going to let Dwight beat him. So the key is to maybe run some pick and roll with Jameer and let Jameer stroke down at the open jump shot. I mean, medium range jump shot, and have Hito Turkoglu do his thing like he did a couple years ago. Because they don't need him.
He isn't playing like he played a couple years ago.
Well, I mean, so many keys. They're going to need him to do that.
I believe the bench will play the biggest factor for Orlando if they're going to get a W tonight. I don't believe they will. Jamal Crawford anchors that bench for Atlanta. And he showed that game one why he was sixth man of the year last year and should have been it this year. Lamar Odom should be a starter. I don't really agree with him coming off the bench. But anyway, that's another argument. However, I'm going with the Hawks tonight.
You're going with the Hawks?
Yeah.
All right, well, if the Hawks were to lose this series or even in a second round, do you think now will be the time for them to break it up? You know, Joe Johnson has the big contract. Josh Smith has a big contract. Al Horford is in line to get paid. You have Jamal Crawford. So what do you think? Do you think now is the time to break it up if this team can't get past the second round?
I believe they were already trying to trade Marvin Williams before. So I'm not sure what the answer is to that. I actually thought about that earlier, and I was saying to myself, they have a nice nucleus similar to maybe Portland, even though Portland deals with a little more injuries. That's gotten them to the playoffs year in and year out and beyond the first round. They played Boston tough. So the capabilities are there. They added a new coach, trying that out first, give the new coach another year with this group. So probably wouldn't break them up if they lose this year. Next year, if this same group goes in out first or second round, yeah, you got to break that team up.
I do think if they go out the first round, they should be broken up just a little bit. I think that
expound on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it's either they need to get a center, a real center. Horford or Smith need to go.
I'd be more inclined to move Smith than Horford.
Yeah, and one of them need to go. Regardless of who you want to move, one of them needs to go. And, put Teague as a point guard and, have Joe as your two and then rock from there, or two or three and rock from there. Because they're going to need to have structure, because now all they do is play with undersized players. I mean, like, how can you win a game? How can you actually think you can compete and win a championship having Al Horford as your center? It's not working. You need to get a real big. Get a real five man. You can move Joe to the three or the two. Groom Teague, because Teague has potential. Groom him and put him at the one and roll from there.
Speaking of five men, Dwight Howard. If Orlando loses this series in this first round, which is possible just because of the way they're playing, do you think he's gone, free agency? Because you got to take into consideration, they've done a lot to kind of, as some people would say, upgrade the talent around them.
Who are they playing this first round? Who's Orlando playing? They're playing the Atlanta Hawks. If the Atlanta Hawks eliminate them, where's he from? He's from Georgia.
Yeah.
Go back home. That's what they're missing. My man just said it. There's the formula. He can bring a Georgia team to that next level.
I kind of like that idea.
I like that idea.
I'm not gonna lie. That's a good fit. Real good fit.
Sorry, Kwame Brown. Sorry about that, bro.
Yeah.
He's from Georgia too.
Is he really?
Kwame Brown.
Oh yeah. Man, it's a good fit. I actually like that. That's what it is. You move Horford.
And we'll be back in Atlanta if that happens.
Yeah, we will.
I'll be in the hotel, but
I'll be in the Marquis Marriott. Oh, the memories.
And I'll be back at my spot that you all know that I was at. Me and Jew was at. We put y'all on to it. But
such lies.
All right, then we're going to move to our last series that we're going to break down, Blazers and the Mavericks. I don't know if either one of you guys caught it on Saturday. Really good game, tight game coming down towards the end. And actually, a player that you kind of bashed last week pulled through. Dirk Nowitzki, he came through in the clutch for him. Hit a lot of big shots in the last 2 minutes of the game.
I bash a lot of people. I bash Rondo. Dirk. I bash Dirk. Yeah, he made
Dirk it. Deserves it.
He's
done enough to take that criticism.
It's one game.
To warrant that criticism, I should say.
It's one game. Portland should be mad at themselves. They lost that game on their own. Game two is tonight. So, you know, I expect in terms of this series as a whole, I expect to see the real Dirk show up. Yeah, I expect
the real Dirk,
like the Eminem, the real Shays, please stand up. I expect to see the real
I won't
Dirk
be surprised
stand up.
Either way. He showed that against Golden State a couple years back in the first round, but he also would do good in the first round or two and then come into San Antonio and choke. He choked against the Heat in the finals, you know. So Dirk is a choker, but he's usually good in these first round matchups. But I wouldn't be surprised if he is himself.
Well,
thank you, Ray.
Speaking of a guy being himself, Nate McMillan, he's always been a guy that's kind of
Coach of the Year.
He's coached some
people. He
should be. You think he should be Coach of the Year, but in the past he's made some controversial comments about the officiating for the game. This time it cost him, I believe, $30,000. Do you think that is a warrant? His comments were warranted. Do you think that they'll type of push the advantage towards Portland for this next game?
Well, this strategy has been done by many NBA coaches. Phil Jackson has done it. Doc Rivers has done it itself. So I think a lot of the great coaches, they do this. They complain to the media or during their press conference about the refs, and eventually they get things out of their way. So it's a good strategy.
Is that the only basis behind it? The facts state 19 free throws in the fourth quarter for Dallas, 2 for Portland. Come on. He had to get that fine. The owner of the Blazers should lend him that $35,000 because that's justifiable. That was awful. That's so, Tim Donaghy stuff right there.
This is my question to you then, Ray. Do you think that there will be a shift within calls for the game tonight?
Hey, so basically you're going to take the question I asked you and you're going to push it on the right?
Yeah,
is that what you're doing?
That's what I do.
They changed the head official.
Oh, did they really?
Yep.
Whoa.
Yeah, Joey Crawford's the head official.
Danny Crawford, the black guy.
And you know what?
And the crazy thing is, I read a statistic. The Dallas Mavericks are 2-16 with Danny Crawford as the leading official.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. This could be a series where the Blazers advance.
Anti-Mark Cuban guy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are anti-Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban's sitting on the third row of the daggone arena.
Do you think that has, you know, his presence, do you think that affects the officiating of the game?
He's in their ears all night. And he has enough money where he could pay them folks if they do a good job. Not saying he does stuff like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that would come out at some point later on in life sometime.
Yeah.
That's interesting. But LaMarcus Aldridge, the guy, he played at an incredible level this year. Should have been an all-star in a lot of people's opinion.
Yeah, Wally bashed him coming out of Texas, too.
Yeah, but I call him the best power forward in the game right now.
You call him the best power forward?
He's the best power forward in the game.
Right now.
Right now.
When he got drafted, he's like, what?
Ray.
What did he
Ray.
Do to get
no,
drafted?
Ray. That is the past. As I age, I get wiser. And like I said, he's one of the best power forwards I've in the game right now. You know, you can name me a power forward and I'll tell you he's better than.
Well,
name me one.
I can't name you one off the top of my
head. Get the rebound, Rondo. The hell are you doing? Sorry.
But I mean, you into the game and I respect that. He's referred to as the guy in Portland. Originally, you know, Portland had their own young big three with Oden, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Brandon Roy.
Was Oden ever part of that?
Really? Yeah, I mean, supposed to be. Yeah, supposed to be. A lot of people.
You know what Oden's going to next year? You know the team he's going to next year? He's going to Cleveland. Watch.
Man. Well, he can't even play. They said he can't run until like December.
We'll be there. He'll be in Cleveland in December playing.
Well, you know, anyway. there's been a shift from Brandon Roy to LaMarcus Aldridge. Is it fair for everyone to put that to label LaMarcus Aldridge now as the guy in Portland?
Yeah. It's fair.
It's only been one season.
No, it's fair because he was a high, like Ray said, you know, I argued with him back then. He's a high lottery pick. He has potential. I mean, even if you look at him, even last year, if you look at some of the matchups he played against Tim Duncan, he scored, he had a couple, he had some impressive games against Tim Duncan. he's now the man, and he's featured. So to me, it's a fair argument.
It's by default with Brandon Roy's injuries, but this is exactly what broke up Penny and Shaq. Penny all of a sudden became the face of the franchise with the man, and Shaq said, "I'm out." So Brandon Roy might come to Washington and say, "Hey, I'm looking for a spot to be the face of the franchise."
The difference is Brandon Roy is broken down. LaMarcus Aldridge is still in this prime.
Well, you can't say that because a lot of people say the same thing about D-Wade, that his best days were behind him, and D-Wade rebounded.
The only problem with Brandon Roy, his knees are a shot,
it's,
man.
Yeah, it's bone on bone. College.
But in terms of race, and I'll get credit when credit's due. If you look at how he gets lift on his shot, it still looks like he got jumping ability. It's just his explosion isn't the same.
LaMarcus Aldridge should be the face of the franchise.
Yeah, he should be.
Best
power forward.
Yeah, with that being said, you know, the Mavericks, in my opinion, could possibly face the same fate as the Atlanta Hawks if they don't advance deep into the playoffs. Do you think, you know, if Dallas doesn't advance deep into the playoffs, do you think they try to break this team up? Because this is an aging team. You got to think about it. Jason Kidd starting point guard. You got Sean Marion. Caron Butler coming off of injury. Tyson Chandler who played good. Then you have Brendan Haywood coming off the bench. So they have a lot of veteran players.
Yeah. Well, break the team up. You're going to have to eventually. Not completely because you want to still win and keep fans in the stands. But with the Cowboys being the main show in town, you got to keep some type of consistency there. So I wouldn't break them up completely. But, yeah, Jason Kidd, it's time to move on. Jason Terry, it might be time to move on. J.J. Barea will have to elevate his role, keep the coach where he is now, and go from there. Caron Butler still has some good years left in him, but Sean Marion, he may have one season left. But, yeah, I would break that team up, start drafting young. This isn't the best draft to maybe build a team on, but maybe they can do something free agency. Brendan Haywood still is a good young big man, though, that they can keep.
Is he young?
Well, he's middle-aged, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's a good
time. I have no idea. I'm just asking to ask him a legitimate question. I have no idea. Well, I don't think that they will break up the team because Dirk Nowitzki is he's a superstar. Dirk is a superstar, and he's a veteran. And I don't think it's just like Steve Nash, where he is right now. I don't think Mark Cuban would do that to Dirk Nowitzki. I think if they broke it up, they're going to bring some high talent coming in. Going to break it up, you know, but I don't think it'll be anything severe. It won't be anything terrible. Like, I think Chandler will still be there. Brendan will still be there, because they like what they bring in terms of height, because the Lakers still are going to have height. Caron will still be there. Yeah. And I don't think they'll break it up. Maybe I can see Jason Kidd flat out retiring, but if he wants to come back, he'll still be there too.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Caron Butler, when we come back from commercial break, we'll talk about his former team, the Washington Wizards.
That's good. Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
Well, you've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
Hey, the Knicks just lost.
I know.
Forget all this other stuff y'all gotta say. We've been distracted by the game. We apologize. But you can catch the Urban Sports Scene every Sunday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on blogtalkradio.com/AppleJesus. Apple Jesus spelled APPOGEEZS. The coach is hosted by Vivian and Coach.
The coach?
Wally is breathing. The show is hosted by Vivian and Coach. Coach. The Orlando Breakers.
This is
who
great.
Is Coach?
This is great.
Coach. Vivian
is,
and Coach.
This is great.
Coach Rodney.
Great.
Ain't that what his name is?
I mean, we
is?
Had a great discussion. We had a great discussion on the show. We were talking about future NBA draft picks. Kemba Walker.
What?
Which, on the show. On the Apple G show.
Oh,
on
this past Sunday.
Yeah, this past Sunday. We're talking about Kemba Walker. We talked about, you know, Calipari, how his players and scandals and even how he tells his players to come out early when they need to. He gives good advice. And how he doesn't – how – these kids, how he doesn't owe the institution of like Kentucky or UMass or Memphis anything. He just owes the kids the best advice he can give them. So it was a good show.
Yeah.
And hail, Jesus Shuttlesworth, Paul Pierce, KG.
All right.
And I
like
said,
we alluded to,
I did say 2-0. I said it'd be 2-0.
Jared Jeffries choked.
Yeah, I did say.
Like, hold on.
I'm
like
right.
I said before we left for break, we said we would talk about the Washington Wizards, Taylor Youngsons.
But I was right though. Sounds
right. You're right. You're right.
That's cool. We can go. Continue.
That's in the past.
Yes.
Taylor Youngsons. Yeah. There was an article in the Washington Post on Sunday. The article was actually his first interview postseason. Post the Wizards season that just concluded. Essentially, Ted Leonsis said that the Wizards are exactly where he thought they would be at. They won 23 games. He said you have to eat your vegetables first before you eat your candy. What he was saying was, you know, he knows that the Wizards are going to lose a lot of games because of the way he's trying to rebuild the team. He's trying to rebuild the team through the draft and with essentially D-leaguers, developmental leaguers, and moderately priced free agents.
What, D-leaguers?
Yeah, he said he's going to build the team through the draft with D-league players and moderate priced free agents.
Just like he did with the Capitals with the minor league hockey team.
Yeah, he said with the Capitals. But my biggest gripe with him is, and anyone who knows me knows, I'm a huge fan of Ted Leonsis. I read his book, The Business of Happiness. I actually volunteered in a youth program that he was involved in with the Hoop Dreams organization. But the thought that he can rebuild this team like he did the Capitals, I think, is wrong, because I think the dynamic of the NBA is different from the NHL. In the NHL, they have a farm system. You can develop your young talent and then bring them up to the major leagues. In the NBA, you have D-League. But the talent in the D-League isn't comparable to the talent that's in, say, a NHL farm system. And that's in my opinion.
Well, the NBA is trying to make it into something like a minor league. They're trying to make D-League into a minor league. I mean, you have talent like Joel Alexander, who used to play for
West Virginia.
You have, was it Lofton, who used to play for Tennessee?
Curtis Lofton.
Yeah, yeah. Is that Curtis Lofton? Is it? I know Lofton.
Curtis Lofton.
Is it Chris?
Was the
is Chris Lofton?
For the Bills.
It's Chris Lofton or something like that, right?
Yeah, I forgot the guy.
Well, Lofton from Tennessee, and also even Rashad McCants is in the D League right now. So
yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, Hasheem the Beat, who was the number two pick,
yeah,
a
players,
couple of years
I mean,
back.
You know, a lot. I mean, even I think I'm not sure, but there's a lot of rookies that go down the D League and play. So I understand it. I understand his thought process. I like the way he's built the Wizards. I think, you know, if he can build it like the Capitals, the Wizards would be blessed. You got your young superstar, John Wall. Young superstar back then when the Caps were bad was Ovechkin. He had a good draft. His secondary draft was good where he had Alexander Semin. He's gotten good. I mean, over here, they have Nick Young, who's a former high first-round pick. They got a steal in trades with Jordan Crawford. Jordan Crawford. And they got a first round, another first round from Atlanta, you know, for that trade too.
Yeah, it's a weak draft. Though.
And you got to build somewhere. You're building the draft, period. In any genre of sports, you're building the draft. NFL, hockey, baseball, you're still building the draft. And he's building his team in the draft. He's getting multiple picks. and he's got younger. He has younger players with even on the bench with Trevor Booker. He's building the team the right way.
Yeah. My thing is with the picks. It's one thing to have picks, and it's another thing to have cap money. But if you don't have the guy who makes the correct picks, i.e. the GM, i.e. Ernie Grunfeld, then I think your picks are essentially worthless. I think that Ernie Grunfeld has been a good GM, but just his track record for drafting, it speaks for itself.
No, I mean, I agree with that. I think Ernie Grunfeld, to a certain extent, I do agree with your point. But I'll say this, and just in terms of what Ted Leonsis is doing, again, I always think you build a team young with the youth first when you have a bad team. Then you add in some veteran players to help you out. I even think Maurice Evans is a good pick, just that, you know, because he's a good role player, not asking for a lot, but as a veteran player who's been and he's been to the postseason. So you get a couple more veteran players. Don't have to be star veteran players, but they just fit a role and they can teach these kids to how to play winning basketball. They'll be okay.
All right, from one Washington D.C. team that's owned by Ted Leonsis, the Wizards. Let's talk about his other team, his team that has championship aspirations this year.
What happened?
The Washington Capitals.
Oh no, no, we got the Alex. We got to talk about Derek Williams and company.
I'm trying to keep the coach show going. It's kind of long. That's why I'm cutting stuff. But okay, hey, Derek Williams.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, evaluate some talent overseas. This is how Neal was found in San Antonio. International players are becoming stars in the NBA, so I would do some recruiting over there. But anyway, Derek Williams is a good guy from Arizona.
Yeah, Derek Williams out of Arizona. He's probably going
to
be the number
hockey expert.
He's probably going to be the number two pick this year.
I'm going to watch basketball right now. Hockey and boxing are the next two subjects.
Derek
two
Williams
fighting sport.
All I say is Derek Williams would be a great pick. For the Wizards to get to that way, they can ship out Andre Blotch and have an actual four that can do something. But will the Wizards get him? No one knows. And I'm sorry, Will, for messing up your segment. Your great transition.
Oh no, it's no problem, man. You know, we can always find a way to transition into it. You know, like I said,
yeah, turn on the Capitals game while we're doing the show so we can find
it's
out.
It's on tomorrow.
Oh. Capitals game is on tomorrow, man.
That's what I said. I'm leaving.
On the nose.
But yeah, like we said earlier, the Capitals, the one Washington D.C. team, the one Washington D.C. team that actually has championship aspirations in this area.
You always take a shot like the Redskins.
I'm not taking a shot.
The one team in this area.
The Redskins, I mean, essentially the Redskins, they are who they are. They're
the Nationals
a 5-11 team. The Nationals, they have an overpaid outfielder in Jason Worth. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I hear you.
What about DC United, man? Stop just trashing on DC teams, man.
I'm not. I'm a huge Georgetown fan.
They don't have championship aspirations, though.
They do. They compete in the Big East year after year.
Ray, you're just trying to get him to argue.
I know he is, but I'm not going to fall for the games. But the Capitals, after losing game three with a goal with a couple of minutes left in regulation, the Caps are now up 2-1. What are your thoughts on game three? What are your predictions on thoughts?
No, I'll tell you. Let me talk about game three. Game three, the Caps, you know, I thought that the goalie play was subpar. I think they gave up goals and defense. I think in terms of game three, that the Neuberg gave up goals, like weak goals in that game. Like the first goal was glove high, which I think a lot of, and from a bad corner, from a bad angle, a lot of decent goalies or I think veteran goalies would stop that easily. But I'm not going to criticize that one game from how he's been playing the last couple of games, because I thought he's been playing excellent. Even though I thought that Varlamov should have been starting, Neuvirth has definitely played well. And in game three, I think the defense lacked to it as well. I think the Rangers kept the puck on their side of the zone a lot, especially when they did score the goal. I thought that a lot, instead of the Caps clearing it from their zone, they kept it there, and their defense was taking forever to get the puck out of their zone and attack. So the Rangers took advantage of it and got a lot of second chances at the goal.
Regarding Neuberg, though, they got lucky. The Capitals, I'm speaking of, got lucky at the end of this, at right before second intermission. That was a goal.
That was so, no, oh, and to me it wasn't. It, well, to me it wasn't a goal, because like one tenth of a second, And then
it was actually 0.3 seconds. I don't know. Apparently, the officials' scorekeeper versus what we could see on television were different for some reason. I don't know why, but it looked like it was 0.3 seconds left.
It's like that
when that puck went in off the rebound.
But it's like that, you know, even in basketball with the whole time, the scorekeeper is totally. I mean, the guy who tells the timekeeper and the TV timekeeper are totally different at the game. Are totally different though.
Well.
But I was glad it wasn't a goal, though. I'll say that much. Because I thought it was a goal while watching it myself.
Yeah, I thought it was.
I ain't going to lie. I didn't think it was a goal. But
Game 4 is tomorrow in the Garden. I don't know if both of you guys heard Bruce Boudreau's comments about the Garden. He essentially said the Garden is a crappy arena that essentially had a good had pedigree to it. You know, tomorrow Game 4 is a big game. Will you think the Caps will pull it off?
Yeah, I think the Caps will pull it off. Like, you know, I predicted this series to go 5, and I don't see how it won't. I don't see how it'll change. Like I said, I think you'll get Ovi playing his style of hockey. You know, he's been playing good. He's playing good so far in this series. I just think they need Simmons. You know, he had that game winning goal in game one. They need him to step it up and hopefully come to play in this big game 4.
Well, if they don't pull out game 4. And if the series happens to be 2-2 after tomorrow, do you think it's deja vu? Here we go again. Because, you know, for the past couple of years, the Capitals have been – last year they were expected to advance to the Stanley Cups.
So, now, yeah, I think it's deservedly so. I think if they go 2-2 against the AC, yeah, it's going to be a lot. It's going to put a lot of pressure on them coming on back home to win game five, and they don't want that added pressure. They want to come back home and be able to close it out. So it's deservingly so to say, especially if they lost to the AC last year. Now this year they're struggling with the AC again. If it is 2-2, excuse me, it'd be struggling. So yeah, I think it'll be in terms of their mentality. I know the players are probably thinking themselves like, this can happen again.
Regardless of what happens, I believe they'll win this first round series. However, usually a hot goaltender is the key to winning the Stanley Cup, and right now with them not appearing to have that with these first three games, I don't think they're poised to win a championship.
You don't think they've been a hot goalie? The goalie's been playing good other than last game.
He's not hot yet.
He's hot enough. I don't like him, but he's hot enough. I'm not even being
They were
biased.
Eliminated last year by a hot goalie. And where'd they go? All the way to the Stanley Cup.
I think their goalie is relatively
on their way there.
The first game, he gave up one goal. Second game, he gave up no goals. He's a hot goalie. I mean, he's only giving up a limited amount of goals.
He gave up
three goals. Even the Pittsburgh Penguins, when they won the Stanley Cup, the Cats put up 6 goals on them one game. He was a hot goalie.
Well, yeah, that's a different type of team that we're talking about. That is an exception to the rule. As you said earlier, there's always an exception to the rule.
Yeah, I'm saying
that. And that year, Detroit put up 8 goals on them to go up 3-2 or something.
Easily.
Point well noted, but I still think that's the pedigree in winning.
Of course. A hot goalie carries it on. I just think Neuber's a hot goalie.
Yeah, but to me, the difference between this year's Caps... The difference between this year's Caps and previous years is the Caps seem a lot more poised. They seem a lot more focused. They seem a lot more confident about themselves in the playoffs.
They do?
Yeah, to me. Just the way they're playing this year. Compared to previous years where they were the front runner, they were on top for the whole season. This year, they kind of had some type of adversity. They had to work their way up to the top. They seem more poised in this first round.
Which is why I think they were saving their best play for the postseason. I believe it's a strategy on their part.
That's good. That's a good thing. I'm just going off what the record shows. I just think that during the stretch, they played great hockey to get home ice advantage, I guess. And that's what they needed to, you know, and that was something they had to play for. As of last year, they had it locked up probably at the, you know, I want to say 20 games or so already.
Yeah,
this year, they had to work, like, every game to, like, the last game of the season.
Yeah, we said that before. It sounds like a repeat.
I know. But doesn't it?
The players, in my opinion, don't panic. It's the fans. The fans in this area, as Will has said over and over again, are desperate for a winner that
they are,
you know. If they it's 2-2, everybody,
especially Redskins,
because I want to say a month and a half or 2 months ago, fans were questioning whether the Capitals would even make the playoffs at all. So,
really?
It goes to show you where the focus of fans are these days here in the Washington D.C. area.
Have some loyalty.
We're going to have some Capitals gear on if they want
to. I'm going to a game.
We're going to the game.
We're going to the game.
You give me some tickets, yeah, I may roll with you.
All right, let's switch from the fans' focus to the cameraman's focus during the this series on Bruce Boudreau. You know, a lot was made of some of Bruce Boudreau's language on 24/7. Do you think because of that series, there's more emphasis on putting him on the camera during the game?
Absolutely. He's a funny character. He's a funny looking dude, period.
He's a bad chubby.
He's just a little.
I don't know what
he reminds me of. It's something I can see in my mind. Oh, but he reminds me of some sort of character.
A Oompa Loompa.
Oompa Loompa. No, not an Oompa Loompa. I'm seeing Jim the Anvil Neidhart in my head.
He got arrested recently.
He looked like he could be a WWE manager or something. I don't know. He looks like a character, like
King Kong. But
like back, remember Jimmy George Hart? People used to walk you to the ring. You had a manager.
George the Animal.
No. What are you talking about?
George the Animal.
Bobby the Brain Heenan type of person.
They don't got a mullet. Bobby the Brain Heenan. I'm sorry. I'm talking about. Sorry.
He just fished me.
Oh, I apologize. I feel bad.
Wow, fish me. Wow, is that a name?
I feel bad about that. Don't say that to me, man.
Wow.
Hey, I apologize. Go ahead, Ray. I apologize. Don't say that to me, man.
But anyway.
That's what y'all do with Apple Jesus. Just cutting folk off.
Man. I apologize. Go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
Shout out to
Coach and Vivian.
Not the Coach and Vivian. The other guy.
Who's the other guy? You know.
Pettis.
Shout out to Pettis against the grain.
Nah. You know, everyone knows me. When I need to voice my opinion, I tend to jump in right there. I don't want to lose my thought. But after, you know, we'll be back from commercial break, and when we come back, I'll give you more of my thoughts.
Pow!
This is President Barack Obama. In the story of America, the greatest chapters are moments of challenge. When we see people serving their country and one another. Volunteers who step forward into hospital corridors and church basements, along levees and fire lines. And the next chapter is yours to help write. Sign up to volunteer at usaservice.org. That's usaservice.org. Let's renew America together.
A message from Renew America Together, brought to you by the Ad Council.
You can catch us on the Sports Crib Podcast Show on Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Steelers Fan. The show is hosted by Jersey Mike Jr. and West Coast Steelers Fan.
Thank you. I was on the show last week, so I don't know what to say. But, hey, big ups to the Sports Crib.
Big ups to the Sports Crib.
And they got a show on Tuesday nights, too, covering boxing. I don't know what the name of it is. It was called Through the Ropes, but for legal reasons, they had to change that. So I'm not exactly sure. They were weighing about three different options. They were going to unveil that. Unfortunately, I did not listen that Tuesday. I don't know why, but I didn't. And it's unfortunate, like I said. But it's a boxing show dedicated to boxing. That's where we are now.
And they're looking for Will T to be on the show.
I'll try to do it. But, you know,
it's a convenient way of saying no. I learned that through network marketing.
Yes, that's true.
Through the pyramid scheme, huh?
No.
That's okay. Back then, I tried to get you in. You said, I love my job. I'll do more work if I need to. I don't care about retiring. Now,
what you saying now?
Cuban?
What you know about?
What you saying now, Ice Cubicle?
You're in the cubicle, too.
No, I'm not.
You're not?
No. Like I'm in office. But, hey, I'm not saying I'm secure. Nobody is.
Yeah, but, you know, like Ray said, alluded to, boxing, that's what we're talking about now. We're not talking about pyramid schemes or cubes or offices.
Whether you still got your family pictures all in your cubicle.
No, I don't have any family pictures.
Yeah, you used to, though. That's what I'm saying. Everything's changed.
I used to.
That's what I'm saying, man. Freedom.
That's why we're doing the show, so we can get freedom. But
yes,
anyway,
sir.
Boxing. I don't know if either one of you saw it, but I definitely did. Andre Berto and... Victor Ortiz fight this past Saturday on HBO. It was a great fight.
It was. To me,
it's the leading candidate for fight of the year so far.
I think it's second. I caught the Morales fight, the playback. I think it's second.
I think this fight had a lot more excitement to it.
You know what annoyed me about the fight? Because it was a great fight, and I totally agree with you. Burrow got beat. That's obvious. He got beat.
Yeah.
I don't like boxers making excuses. Like, after the fight, Burrow said, man, my fans know that's not me. You know what I mean? That's not what I do. Also, like I said, that wasn't me. And they were asking what was wrong. He was just like, I just didn't feel loose. I didn't feel that. You lost. Yeah, he flat out got beat. I'm a Burrow fan. I was rooting for Burrow. You know, me and Al were watching the game. I mean, watching the fight, excuse me, on Saturday. And, you know, I was rooting for Burrow. When he got knocked down and then he came back in the other round and knocked Cuz back down, I was like, okay, here we go. Burrow's about to show it. But I felt like he was trying to do the rope-a-dope. Like, he would stay on the ropes, get hammered, but obviously he was using the ropes to stay up. I thought he was trying to make him tired. But then, you know, as the fight went on, it was like, okay, he's not trying to get him tired. He just needs the ropes to stay up.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting fight. A lot of people kind of bashed the fight initially when it was made because Victor Ortiz was moving up from junior welterweight up to welterweight. Well, a lot of people don't really understand about Victor Ortiz is Victor Ortiz is a big guy. He could actually, he could box at 154 and probably would have no limitations or no problems. The guy has a lot of power. A lot of people knocked him because prior to this fight against Berto, he was in a draw with Lamont Peterson. Then prior to that, he quit on a stool against Marcos Mayanda.
Yeah. But I guess this, I mean, if you look at it that way, in terms of Victor Ortiz, he did lose. I mean, he did tie to Peterson, which a lot of people did think that he won anyway. To a lot of people, they still think that he beat Peterson. I like the call. I like it, but a lot of people don't get it twisted. A lot of people thought that he lost Peterson lost to Ortiz. You know, I don't agree. I'm gonna say I don't agree, yeah. But I'm saying a lot of people have been saying that. But this is my question. You know, not talking about Ortiz, was this loss damaging for Berto in his career because he was undefeated?
I don't think it's so much damaging. I do think this is one of those fights that I think if Andre Berto is to ascend to that next level of boxing stardom, we'll definitely look back at this fight and we'll say this was the fight that got him focused. This was the fight where he saw that, okay, and not to say that Andre Berto doesn't train hard, because he does. He trains hard. But we can say this is where he put together not only the physical but the mental aspect of it and took his career to a next level.
No, I don't think this fight can even hurt him in terms of fights down the road or anything. I think his fight showed that, you know, he looked like he was getting his tail whipped. He still came back. He showed that, you know, he still has the power in this weight class to still just that alone, just like, you know, a la, even though he's not, you know, obviously in his prime, not close to it, but a la Mike Tyson, even if you look like you can have him beat, he's still powerful enough with that power and in that speed to get you one punch. And that's how I looked like every time he was on the ropes, he had that one punch.
Yeah, he always has a puncher's chance.
Yeah,
But I will say the one thing for him, I think sooner rather than later, they need to get him back into the ring.
They do.
Because he's such a young guy, the thing is, you don't want him laying around, you know, starting to lose a little bit of confidence, starting to second guess himself, because confidence is key in boxing.
Yeah, ask Fernando Vargas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It happened to him. He sat around, and eventually he lost his confidence. He was never the same. But in terms of Berto, I think Berto will be okay. I think this fight can't damage him. I think it made it stronger.
Yeah,
it
I actually it think it helped increase his popularity.
Yeah, I think when, like the fans watching that fight, if anybody get a chance to watch, they should watch the replay on HBO. It was a great fight. Like these two dudes went to war for real. They went to war, and I was impressed with Ortiz, obviously, but Berto, I'm a fan of Berto, and I'm obviously being biased to a certain extent, but I'm not mad at the kid, because, you know, a lot of power punches like Berto, when they get knocked down and getting dominated, they just, you know, fall by the wayside during the fight. Him, I just think he just kept fighting.
Yeah, obviously with Victor Ortiz winning, this kind of clears the way for bigger fights for him. Obviously, everyone wants to see a rematch with him against Andre Berto, but I don't think that's going to happen immediately. But one fight that a lot of people are kind of calling for, and actually I do think this is a fight that the guy would take, is him versus Floyd Mayweather, say in September around Mexican Independence Day. or maybe after Manny Pacquiao is done with Shane Mosley. Some people said that him versus Manny Pacquiao, but I don't see that fight happening just because of the beef between Golden Boy and Top Rank Boxing.
Yeah, I don't think, honestly, I don't think Ortiz is on that class.
He's a very flawed boxer.
Yeah, he's very flawed. Yeah, I don't think he's on that class in terms of Pacquiao and Mayweather. Now I just think they're throwing out names just to get him some work until you know people hope that these two can actually fight. I'm talking about Mayweather and Pacquiao, but they're just throwing names out there. Ortiz's name has been thrown out there just because he just beat Berto, and we all know Berto wasn't going to fight Mayweather because Berto and Mayweather are real tight, so he doesn't want to fight.
Both of them are managed by Al Heyman.
Yeah, and they're really tight friends too at the same time, yeah. So they don't want to fight. So hopefully, you know, hopefully we can get a fight, a secondary fight with something that can happen. But I like if Ortiz wants to fight Pacquiao, the momentum's good. If it's all about money for him, then sure, fight him.
Yeah.
If it's all about money.
Yeah, Ortiz definitely, he's a Mexican American, so people are definitely tuning in to watch that fight. But we're going to transition now from boxing into the NFL, from one violent sport to another. During this lockout, I saw an interesting article, actually, that was on Yahoo, I believe, last week. It was about NFL players taking high-risk loans or predatory loans from loan sharks, where essentially if they default on any of the payments, then the interest rate skyrockets up to 30% APR. A lot of people, a lot of people are well compensated who play in the NFL by our standards, from a regular working person standard. They're well compensated. So you kind of ask the question, why do you need to take out such a huge loan if you're making millions and millions of dollars?
I would see maybe like a Brandon Banks who makes the minimum. But even with that being said, what's the minimum wage in the NFL? Is it $250,000.
I want to say $350,000.
It's $350,000.
I think so.
Yeah, $350,000. Mm-hmm. $350,000 or
$450,000. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So I'm guessing if you break that down by 16, what's that, Will? Because you're a good math dude. $350,000 divided by 16.
It's a little bit under $30,000.
Okay,
per
so you
game.
Get about $30,000 per game. So Brandon Banks, should that cover his mortgage and expenses? Absolutely.
But
should he have something left over after that? By our standards, probably
yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's
but
what I'm going to say.
They live, obviously.
It goes back to the whole argument we had earlier before the show, right? I mean, not before, but during the pregame.
About players not being responsible. Yeah, not being responsible. Yeah, but obviously,
but my point
by our standards, we all say because we work a regular 9-to-5, we'll say that. You know, these guys make X amount, $100,000 or millions of dollars. What are you doing with your money? But if you live a certain lifestyle, then your expenses increases. Anyone who makes more money, your expenses are going to increase.
Let's use him as an example because he's lower tier, makes the minimum. He makes the bare minimum in the NFL. I'm speaking of Brandon Banks,
okay.
Kick returner for the Washington Redskins. Estimate how much his mortgage is monthly, you think?
I don't know.
He doesn't strike me as a guy who lives in Northern Virginia in a mansion like a Clinton Portis or somebody. So I'm guessing he doesn't have a townhouse, though. So we're going to say his house ran him for about $500,000, more than likely over a 30-year mortgage. So his mortgage payment probably is between $1,500 and $3,000. Let's say,
probably
for the sake of this argument, we'll just use the $2,500. Okay, you got $30,000 a game.
Okay.
All right, so you still got, what, $28,000 to play with? What?
No, you're right.
I'm just trying to break it down. Okay.
You're the man.
You got to take taxes out of it.
That's true, too.
So
right,
that's
half of it, like $17,000.
So that's about 40%.
Okay, so after mortgage with his game check and after taxes, we don't know, this is hypothetical. Let's say he is left, after mortgage, after taxes, he's left with
about $17,000. Let's say
$17,000. I was going to say about $1,550.
Okay.
$15,500. $15,500. Okay, you gotta get food. He's an athlete. I don't know if he has a family, but
I don't think so.
On average, he's probably spending about what, $1,000 on food a month. You think? Not even that. Probably. We're gonna guess.
Yeah.
You're probably feeding your boys, who you're taking care of, who you grew up with, whatever. So about $1,000 on food. That leaves him with $14,500 after food and mortgage. So house and food is taken care of. You got a car payment, maybe. Probably. He probably has a car
payment.
He didn't pay. I don't think he paid a car.
Bought like 2-3 cars.
And this is just one game check we're breaking down. So I'm miffed. And we're talking about the lowest paid dude in the league. So what are these dudes doing?
I always say
it's a light. Like I said, like I don't make that type of money, but I'll just say that it's a lifestyle choice that, you know, if you make that type of money, then naturally you're going to have more expensive taste. And except for you, Wilder.
No, I wouldn't.
Well, see, Damon Dash.
I would have a Camry. Have a Camry.
Remember Damon Dash? Rockefeller?
Yeah.
One of his condos, his mortgage was over $15,000 a month.
Damn.
So this is what a lot of these dudes are doing. It still doesn't make sense because we're talking about guys who make millions, so their game checks are probably, you know, quarter to half $1 million just for their game check.
Yeah, they said that one of his game checks, this is what I read. I don't usually like to put people's financial business out there, but was close to $1 million, $950,000 per game. So, you know,
right.
Yeah, these guys, they make a lot of money, but they also spend a lot of money. And they live a certain lifestyle. I think it's hard for us because we don't live that lifestyle to say, it's easy for us to say, well, I wouldn't do X, Y, Z with my money.
Of course.
Good. Big ups to Ware for the Cowboys. I believe he's like.
He gave his $60,000.
He's a beast.
The average person. You know, like us, is going to, with that money, we're going to pay our house and cars off. So we don't have a mortgage. We don't have any car payments. We try to eliminate the monthly bills. We don't, you know, they didn't have student loans. What are they doing? You got child support that's killing some of them because child support is real.
It's real, of course.
So I think some of the fathers, which most of them are fathers of women that were, sorry to say, probably groupies or people they met out at a club.
Children born out of
wedlock. So, yeah. I don't want to call it that.
That's what Albert
Hainsworth, that's a child being born out of wedlock, but that's just somebody you met. This isn't the person you got a relationship with that y'all split up.
Yeah.
It happens.
It happens.
A one-day baby mama.
I'm just saying, I really don't understand. Even if you put me in that position, I still don't understand what they spend their money on. And like I said, I will say this. You do, in that position, especially depending on your background, or even if you come from a good background, you take care of your family and friends. So you could spend a good $1 million probably in a month just taking care of everybody.
Well, I always say this. I mean, you could take care of your own. And when I mean your own, your family and your close friends responsibly. You know, don't be their caregiver now, but I mean take care of them responsibly.
Yeah, essentially,
like give them something, but not like over the
okay,
over the
main. Prime example: Michael Vick. Did you see his sisters and his mom's expenses alone monthly that he had to cover?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was in the thousands. I'm talking about.
See what I'm saying?
Between the three, I think he has two or three sisters and his mom. It was over $15,000 in monthly expenses just for them.
Well, I've always been a firm believer of if I were to be get into a position like that, I would give someone a hand up rather than a handout.
Uh-huh.
I would help them establish a business. Or send them back to school. That way, they can feed themselves. It's like the gift that keeps giving.
Yeah.
Well, I would agree with that to a certain extent. If I was a professional athlete. I would pay a house off for my parents and my siblings. I would make sure they don't have a mortgage. Like I said, try to eliminate them. Maybe their student loans pay it off, but I'm not going to say, all right, here's your credit card. Go do your thing. I'll cover it. Because they're going to host everybody's baby shower. They're going to pay for such and such weddings on your tab. And this is what people like. This isn't football, but people like Antoine Walker had one credit card with 10 people registered to it. So everybody was spending on that because he thought the money was never going to run out.
Of course. I totally agree. Like, I would, you know, pay for my folks' house and they wouldn't have a mortgage to have to worry about. I'd make sure, like, my folks wouldn't have to work a hard 9-to-5 like they do now. I would take care of them, but would I give them, like Ray said, thousands of dollars like at nauseam? No, I would not.
Your parents, really?
Well, not at nauseam. Like, I'd be responsible with it. Like, I'll give it to you.
You're not going
to
just let your mom say, hey, I want paper for my friend's wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at nauseam.
But needs. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's the problem with these athletes. I don't even think it's the family. Obviously, you feel that you have to, obviously, you're going to have to take care of your family. It's the point where you're taking care of your friends. I think your friends, to a certain extent, people go overboard. Because especially with friends who are not even loyal to you.
Yeah. LeVar Arrington was buying Louis 13, I think, shots of it for people one time or something like that. And
wow.
What is it, $80 a shot?
$100
just per shot.
My man.
I think he bought, I don't know how many shots, but he probably, in one night, might have spent $30,000, which is, it happens. You saw Jordan's sons, what they spent at a strip club. So the lifestyle is unbelievable. Some of these hotels that they rent out, man.
Yeah, well, with, you know, the lockout and so many players being in financial distress, do you think that this will teach them to better budget their money in the future?
No.
I knew that was your answer.
They'll get paid, and they'll do it again. You know, the lifestyle of being the lifestyle, what we see as a society, especially with a lot of young athletes that come from urban areas, you know, it's the lifestyle, what is entrenched in society with rappers and, you know, certain actors and actresses and as an athlete, they like to live a certain lifestyle. They think this is the cool thing to do. It's cool to go to a club and hold it down. They think it's cool to have 5-6 cars on their lot. They think it's cool. It's cool to have a
MTV big Cribs.
Exactly. It's cool to have a big a diamond earring on your, you know what I mean, or whatever. It's cool to have all that.
Whatever. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to reiterate. Those are well-known facts. But I'm jumping ahead a bit. Like the Rookie Symposium and all these different things they have designed, they focus on investing your money or learning how to become a broadcaster. But investments is a lot of the problems with NFL players. Mark Brunell, Carlos Rogers, two people who we know here locally who have made terrible investments, and it is really draining financially. And I believe that's what a lot of these players do. Because Michael Vick had all these loans and he had his own car dealership. He had a couple dealerships, and he owes that. That's why he's a main runner. He had a club he owned on. So they take out loans for businesses, and it bites him, man.
And that's why, you know, I know it's a different sport, but that's why I get credit to LeBron James. He became, like, befriended, like, Paul Allen and company to learn how to be a good businessman. You know what I mean? He's trying to even own a soccer. I mean, I think a international soccer.
Manchester
United down there. So look how, so it's not every athlete. I don't want to say that. There are athletes out there who are responsible. But like Ray said, a lot of them are thinking about trying to, better themselves, own a real business or something, and learn, get a business, like get an advisor, teach you for real. All they're thinking about is, you know, like Ray said, like the cool thing, get a club.
The potential return.
Yeah.
The Bernie Madoffs of the world. You're going to get a quick return for it and double and triple your money. So it's a lot of them are uneducated because they go to school for sports. They don't take serious classes. So it happens, and this is the subject. But these loan sharks, to get back to the actual question, I wouldn't deal with them, but if you had to and you know next year you're going to make a certain amount of money, go for it.
Yeah, well, that's a lot to digest, you know, just talking about the loan sharks and the NFL players and finance and all that stuff. So we're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk baseball.
Baseball.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Last segment. Baseball.
I know.
Local baseball. In fact, Orioles. They've been playing very good. Wally, you were right. You know, you said Buck Showalter, he'll turn. No, I'm just saying in reference to, you know, your comments from the preseason, you said Buck Showalter definitely turned this Orioles team around. Adam Jones has been playing great. Can't lie. You were right. You were spot on.
Thank you for trying to clown me on the slide because I'm wrong, obviously. At the moment, I was wrong. We're on an 8-game losing streak. How do we get to this eight game losing streak at the moment? No, we're winning right now. We're winning 4-0. They're winning 4-0. But how we get to this point? How we get to this point? Was hopefully it's ended. At the beginning was poor pitching, by the starters. Then it became something different. We couldn't score. It's when the starters started pitching. I mean, then it was like, okay, we had our closer was blowing saves or pitching bad in the ninth. So that all added in. And I honestly, you know how people say what a bad team does and what they produce, that you put it all together and that's a bad team at the moment. Hopefully Buck's going to turn around and we can get things going.
I have nothing to say about the Baltimore Orioles.
You should. They're a great team.
No,
eventually.
The Orioles are the best team in this area, but on paper.
On paper. That's good. That's a good point.
Let's drive down 295 to Washington, the Washington, D.C. area's other baseball team, the Washington Nets. They're over 500 now, which is a surprise to a lot of people.
8-7.
Last year, around this time, up until close to All-Star break, until they called Strasburg, they were flirting with 500.
Yeah, Pudge.
So it happens. I think the biggest difference on this year's team than last year's is the changes that have been made, bringing in Rick Ankiel, getting rid of Nigel Morgan, the experience of Ian Desmond and other players who last year, you know, lacked the confidence. They also depended a lot on Adam Dunn's bat, which I don't feel like there's a true dependence on that this year, although some will say your lineup is stronger with him in it than without. But we'll see what the numbers show as time goes on.
Well, we'll see. I think as long as I'm at not just Adam Dunn, but also Ryan Zimmerman, who, you know, they did put a lot of pressure on, but he did come through. With Zimmerman going down, because I believe he's on a 15-day DL, I want to see how, you know, this is going to be a telling time for the Nets, seeing what they can do when Zimmerman out, because he's still a big part of the offense. Regardless of anything, he is the big bat in the offense. Jason Worth, it's a lot of pressure on him now. It's going to be a lot of pressure on Jason Worth, a lot of pressure on Adam LaRoche, a lot of pressure on even Ian Desmond as a leadoff hitter. It's a lot of pressure on these individuals. But, you know, the bright spot for the the Nats has been the play of the catcher. I think his name is Ramos. He's been the bright spot. He's actually the starting catcher right now. I think at the time when I was looking at him, I think he was hitting 380, close to 400. So the Nats have some good young pieces. Like I said, I don't think this year is going to be the Nats year. I think next year will be their year because it's going to all trickle down to the pitching staff. I think the pitching staff next year is going to be probably their strength. I think when you have Jordan Zimmerman, you'll have Strasburg coming back, you have Lannon. Those three right there are young core pitchers at the moment. You can work around them. You can get two capable starters, but you have three good pitchers. I think the Nats down the road will be a strong team. Now, do I think they're going to continue this 500 play this season? I mean, no, I don't think so. I think the loss of Strasburg is going to hurt eventually. I think the loss of Adam Dunn is going to hurt. I think that Adam LaRoche is a good player. I don't think he's a player that can replace Adam Dunn.
No, so you're saying this year they'll be sub 500.
Yeah.
Almost maybe flirting with 500 until
late
July.
No, not even that good. Oh, for flirting with 500?
Yeah, until late July. And then
they'll burn out. So maybe until like.
I don't know about that. I believe they're poised to win over 80 games.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't think the pitching staff is strong enough. Other than Jordan Zimmerman and Lannon has his days. You know what I mean? I think Jordan Zimmerman is a stud. As a pitcher, I think he's a stud. I think Lannon, though, he has his moments when his mechanics, if his mechanics stray, then he's a pitcher who can give up 5, 6, 7 runs. If his mechanics are solid, he can get you to 7.
I totally agree.
And, you know, pitch a low
game. Still got LeVon Hernandez, who's a veteran pitcher.
Yeah, he's a good veteran. But one thing about LeVon, which is a good pitcher. LeVon is a good pitcher. He's a good pitcher because he pitches. He doesn't have overpowering stuff. He's a good pitcher. But the thing about LeVon, his age catches up as the season goes on. So when he hits the hot spots of the Major League Baseball season, like July and August, he wears down.
You win your series against the Mets. You come close or even 500 with the Braves. The Phillies, we already know what the deal is with that. Florida, you can win that, you can win your series against them. You can. I'm just saying, Florida every year is this. The Nats want to be what Florida is this year.
Of course.
Year. Florida's always,
but you know what?
One game over 500, and they're content with two fans in the stands. But that type of team will bring fans to the stands here in D.C.
That's true. With Florida, with a team like Florida.
Florida does every year what the Nats could achieve this year, and the fans will be okay with.
But the thing about Florida is that they always give you a good pitching staff with Hanley Ramirez, who's there, like an all-star player, like who's honestly, in terms of talent, probably one of the best baseball players you're going to see, especially at the shortstop position. You put that, and even when their young outfield is cool with Stanton and company, Florida has a solid team. It's all about putting that young nucleus together. The Nats would love to have the talent that Florida has. They would love to have it.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know what I mean? No, Florida's a better team. I'm just saying, but they're beatable.
Oh, yeah, I mean, because they're not. Yeah, they're
to
not
be
a
honest
team.
With you, Atlanta's a good team, but they're beatable.
Oh, Atlanta's
as
beatable,
well.
Too. Yeah. I
believe they can achieve a Florida like season, is what I'm saying. We can be happy with that because Florida does well every year, considering they just don't do well enough always to make the playoffs.
But that
system needs to be changed. And if it is, the Nationals will have a much better opportunity to make the playoffs.
But for that to happen, the Nats need, you know, other than LeVon and Zimmerman and Landon, they're going to need some consistent pitching. Like, LeVon has to be on his A game, period, throughout.
Yeah, he'll wear down eventually. The learners have money. They need to continue to invest.
That's true.
And they can do it, but track record shows they probably won't.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of another week of our show, The Urban Sports Scene. Wally, tell the people where they can get in touch with us and how they can hear our show.
Oh, yeah. So listen to the show. Visit www.wallyo.podbeam.com. We're on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
Just want to reference, today is our 1-year anniversary. We said nothing about it.
I know, I was thinking about that myself.
We totally forgot, and sometimes when you have a person in charge that's not necessarily ready for that position, but they are excited about it, stuff like that happens.
Yeah, so, or if you have a guy that puts together an outline and clearly doesn't mention anything in the outline or notes, then, you know, it's easy to forget about these things.
Hey, BH, but much special behind the scenes coming out.
But also, you can catch us on the Apple G's radio show on Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Well,
just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/Apple G's. Apple G's is spelled backslash, excuse me.
Net a slash. On
APOGEEZ.
It's been a fun year. The NFL schedule came out today. Redskins, Giants, opening day. Atlanta plays Chicago. Things just really.
I know. And the Eagles are playing. I don't even know who the Eagles are playing.
Things just really went off the deep end today.
Just see Vic.
This is our 1-year anniversary. This was and the 30th episode was most special.
Yeah, it was. That was a great show. Yeah.
I wasn't there, so
I feel bad for you.
It wasn't that special to me.
And also,
to say the least.
And also on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. You can catch us on the Sports Crib podcast show. That is www.blogtalkradio.com/WCStillAFan. That's hosted by Jersey Mike Jr. and West Coast Stella Fan. Just catch him this Thursday, and hopefully catch us too as well on the show.
Us being you and Ray?
No, just anybody. It could be anybody. You never know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just tune in. It's gonna be somebody from the Urban Sports thing. You never know.
Exactly. So we everywhere. We all over the net.
And also, before I finish up, I want to make sure I got to put one more plea out there because I don't think I've been heard.
Oh, God. This is obsession, man. But I'm going to let you get your time.
You haven't responded to me yet. I told you I'm coming to you respectfully. Hopefully, I'm going to send you another tweet. We Urban Sports Team. We want to interview. That's all.
Shout out to Fish, too. Shout out to Fish, who was a big part of the show. 1-year anniversary.
Yeah, that, too. Yeah, that, too. Why are you interrupting? I'm talking about Skylar Diggins. You're going to interrupt. I mean, I understand. Fish, yeah, we love you, man. Great baby shower. It was cool. You know, I was like really late. But still, it was cool, though. Skylar Diggins, just holler at me. Interview. It's going down.
She's 19 years old.
I know. We was in elementary school. She was in elementary school when we was in college.
She's 20 now. We're still.
Yeah, it's not even about that. See, it's not even about that. You know, it's not about that. It's about getting an interview.
You didn't sort out Maya Moore's interview.
I was about getting an interview.
Any other women's.
What are you talking about?
She's good looking.
No, that's not the point. I'm trying to get an interview with Skylar Diggins.
You can lie to everyone.
I'm not lying at all. Lying is a sin.
But
I don't lie.
Thanks. You know, it's another week. 1-year anniversary for us. You know,
You just saying somebody, that now?
If somebody had to put it in the notes, you know, then it would have been mentioned more frequently throughout the show.
She doesn't write. Lil Wayne doesn't write. People like me, I don't need all that.
Man, they can't hear you from far away. You too far away. You too, get to the mic. Get to the mic and say that. You know what I mean? Why are you so far away saying that?
All right, man. Thanks again for listening to us, and we'll holler at y'all next week.